Sea of Red, it's time for another Fireside Chat, the official podcast of Flames fans. It's go time.
Hey, we're back. It's been a week since we've talked to everybody and a busy week since the Flames bye week. As always, I'm Dan alongside Matt. And Matt, half full or half empty on this one? Would you say the Flames are on a 4-game losing streak or an 11-game point streak?
Well, if you look at it, the Flames gave up points to everybody, so that's obviously not good. But when you only score 6 goals in 4 games and you come out with 4 points, it's like, that's okay, I guess. Not ideal, obviously, but 3 of the 4 teams that didn't matter whatsoever that we lost the game to them, so it is what it is. I trend more towards 4-game losing streak than 11-game point streak because, you know, they need to actually score goals to win games, and they haven't been doing that.
At the same time, with the loser point the way it is, I mean, those couple loser points might be the difference at the end of the year between the Flames making the playoffs or not. So at this point, especially for where we're at, I'd rather get the loser point.
Oh, definitely. Me too.
You know, I'd rather, if we're going to lose, we at least take 1 point away. Well, let's recap those games. We haven't talked since the bye week. We did a special last week where we talked with our friend Kevin Olenek, but didn't talk about any of the games. So the Flames came back from their bye week and took on the Jets. And the Jets were able to end the Flames' streak at 7 games as Hellebuck made 30 saves. And the Jets got a 2-1 win in the shootout on this one. Overall thoughts on the Jets game?
Well, you could tell that the Flames were coming off their bye week. Most teams that are coming off their bye week tend to struggle in their first game back, and Calgary was flat for most of the game. I do not think that the Troy Brouwer goal should have been waved off necessarily, but it is what it is, and the Flames got a point against a good team.
You know, I thought this was a really interesting game to see. I mean, we have to remember that this Winnipeg team was just a few short years ago the terrible Atlanta Thrashers team. And to see how far they've come in a few short years is amazing to me. Like, this was a good hockey team to watch.
Well, Atlanta / Winnipeg, they for years have selected players that have been either first or second on my draft list. Since like 2011, when they selected Scheifele and Berchi were 1-2 on my list for the Flames.
Patrick Steffen.
Well, it started when they went to Winnipeg. You know,
They inherited an okay roster, and really, I mean, you know, since they've gone to Winnipeg, they've really upped their game, and it's really cool to see that, because when they moved there, I thought they were going to be terrible for a couple of years.
Oh, yeah, and they still have a little bit of ways to go, but they're on the right track, and honestly, I think for the Central Division, they're going to be the monster from that division for a number of years, because all of their good players are very young, sort of like Calgary's, and I think that Calgary and Winnipeg will eventually be the two teams to beat in the West.
When Sheveldayev was originally given that job when the team moved to Winnipeg, I honestly didn't think he would last long in that role. I thought he was a transitional GM, but he's done a really good job.
Well, he understood that in order to build a contending team, you need to start in the draft, and if your team's just mediocre average like Atlanta was, your team has to be bad-ish for a while, and you have to draft smartly. And like with Edmonton and Buffalo and Arizona, they've been bad, but they haven't drafted smartly, and that's why they continue to flounder. And where both Calgary and Winnipeg, we were terrible, and now we're not, because the draft picks, not only in the first round, but in later rounds, have resulted in quality players that have helped push both teams into playoff positions.
Talking about a team who's not in a playoff position, our second game this week that the Flames played since the bye week, and this was one I thought would be a sure win for the Flames. They took on the bottom feeders, the Buffalo Sabres. And Buffalo's gone on a bit of a tear since this game, a 3-game win streak since. But the Flames, again, couldn't get it done and lost in overtime as Jack Eichel scored the game-winning goal. Anything you want to talk about in this one besides the fact that Chad Johnson stymied us?
Well, I was going to mention that if it wasn't for Chad Johnson standing on his head, that first line probably would have had 5 goals in that game between them. But
I kept thinking all game, these guys should know how to solve Chad Johnson.
Yeah, well, sometimes the goalie does good things, and like they know, the goalies know the shooter's habits too, and it's one of those unfortunate things that it is what it is, and Calgary always tends to play down to Buffalo's level whether we win or lose against them. I've noticed that for years. It's like each game against them has been a painfully, dreadfully boring affair, and that one was no different, really, other than the Flames were pretty much skating circles around the Sabres, and they just couldn't solve Johnson.
The best, I think, description of this game is I saw a great meme on Twitter after this one. Do you remember in the mid-80s when they had those Scooby-Doo cartoons? And at the end, it would always be the bad guy saying, "If it wasn't for you pesky kids and your dog..."
Yeah.
Somebody posted one that said, "If it wasn't for you pesky Sabres and your goalie..." with the fist wave. So that's pretty much it. Chad Johnson stood on his head
one. Yeah, like the rest of the Sabres are a tire fire, and like they deserve to be one of the worst teams in the league because they are one of the worst teams in the league, and that's not going to change anytime soon.
So it was, I guess, you know, this was good in one way, in that if we're going to give up a point, we might as well give up, you know, the points to Buffalo, because it means nothing to either team at that point.
Well,
but
even
at the
same
time, you should be able to beat Buffalo.
Yeah, even the loss to Winnipeg. Winnipeg is going to be one of the top 3 teams in their division. So it makes absolutely zero difference to us.
Yeah, besides the fact that we should be able to, I mean, if we're going to potentially see them in the playoffs,
true,
we'll make sure we can beat them.
Oh, true. But at the end of the day, like, is it horrible that each of those games resulted, you know, like, if say we lost the Winnipeg game and in regulation and won the Buffalo game in regulation or overtime, we still have 2 points. So on one hand, yeah, it sucks that they lost both, but the net result, who cares?
And then the next game of the week was the one the Flames had to win and weren't able to do so. This is when our division rivals, the LA Kings, came to town. And we, again, lost, but lost in OT. Tanner Pearson scored the winner for the Kings. I was at this game covering the game as media, and I got to say, the feeling in the press box was, what a terrible game. Like, it was a boring, boring hockey game to watch.
Well, yeah, Calgary,
the Monahan goal early, I thought it would get people into it. I thought it would get the team going and the fans going. And by the end, even just looking down at the sea of red from the press box, I thought, wow, I haven't seen them this bored in a long time.
Yeah, and it is what it is.
This is one of those nights where the most interesting thing going was the wave.
Yeah, and Calgary is entirely out of sync offensively, and you can see that throughout the lineup, and it especially with the Frolik injury, it makes the Flames basically a one line team. And so if teams can shut down the Gaudreau line or limit them only to a goal or two, then you're pretty much going to skate away with 2 points. And yeah, the Flames were able to break through with a absolutely stunning goal in that game, but that was it. And there's nothing else. And
talking to Coach Gullitson after the game, he did say this team played a good defensive game. They were playing a really good defensive game, a responsible game, but you're not getting enough pucks on or near the net.
Well, that's the case in each of the first 3 games. The Flames played well defensively. And if you're looking at just that, like, they only gave up 3 goals in regulation in the 3 games. Like, you can't really ask for much more than that defensively. So it's just that the fact that the Flames have no secondary scoring is the main problem. And thankfully, Frolik is going to be back tomorrow in the game against Las Vegas. But the Flames still need another scoring piece somewhere in the lineup, because they just need one.
Yeah. I think as we get close to the deadline, it really tells us We do need to go out and get something to help with that secondary scoring.
Yeah, because the first line can do their own thing. Like, they're going to score goals. They'll probably chip in one or two per game. It's just that you need more than that to win, and you only have parts of lines that are good, and that's the problem. You need to have all three parts on a line carrying their weight to a larger degree in order for the line to be successful. And like, if you look back when the Janko, Bennett, and Jágr line was going, or Hathaway in the early part of his tenure this season, each one of those guys was carrying their weight and they were contributing. But as Hathaway's struggled, the other two parts of that line has struggled. And since Frolik went down with injury, Tkachuk and Backlund have been okay, but they could have more.
And it's interesting sometimes to really see who carries those lines.
Yeah.
Well, let's finish up the week, and then we'll talk a little bit more about Frolik. The last game of the week, the one that just for the sake of pride, I wanted the Flames to win, and the Flames should have won here, didn't, was going into Edmonton for their first game on the road since the bye week and ended up losing in a shootout 4-3 to our provincial rivals. You mentioned it last week that these wins against the Flames by the Oilers are like their Stanley Cup, but this is terrible. We just can't seem to beat the Oilers these days for two seasons now.
Well, it is what it is. The Flames should have won this game.
And who is Brandon Davidson?
Well, he's a decent defenseman when he's with Edmonton, and he's not an NHLer anywhere else. But, yeah. That was totally a game that the Flames should have won, and I can't really fault Rittich too much on the goals that he surrendered. It is what it is.
This was the second game this week where there was a questionable goal called back. I mean, as much as I'm a Flames fan, you got a question if that McDavid goal being disallowed was really the right call or not.
No, that shouldn't have been.
And that spurred a lot of talk at the All-Star break with Bettman and others about, you know, we need to either redefine what goalie interference is or redefine what we do video review on.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that, like, if you're having chintzy calls where, like, the guy's skate is, like, 5 millimeters off the ice at the blue line, does it really frickin' matter? You know, and to me, no, of course not, because who cares? He's, you know, obviously onside-ish. Like, even if they just tweak that rule where as long as you're in the vertical plane of the blue line instead of skate on ice, that would be perfectly acceptable. But, you know, it's just they gotta narrow the parameters so that way it's not guess whether it's a goal right now with each goal.
If you listen to Commissioner Bettman during the All-Star break, he said, you know what, we have to assume the call on the ice was right. And only if there's an egregious dispute or an egregious change do we ever change it. But he said we have to trust that the official on the ice got the call right more often than not. And it seems like right now we're double-checking too many things.
Yeah, and, like, I'm not opposed to, like, mistakes getting corrected. It's just when you're getting to the, like, needing the electron microscope to figure things out, like, you're getting ridiculous.
Yeah, assume the call on the ice was right and move on. Unless it's a playoff game or a game that's going to take a team out of playoff contention, you know, at a Calgary-Edmonton game, it really doesn't matter in the end.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Matt, with that, the Calgary Flames are still sitting in a decent position, having picked up some points in every game. They now sit at 58 total points, third place in the Pacific Division. We have Dallas and Colorado in the wild card. Dallas at 60 points, Colorado's at 57. LA and Minnesota also, and Anaheim tied for 57 right below them. So we're in the playoff race right now, but we're only 1 point up. We need to start getting things back on track after four consecutive losses. Besides Frolik coming back, which might help, what do you think this team needs to do to get back on track and start getting some pucks in the net?
Well, they need to figure out how to score goals on the power play. That would definitely help matters, because I think we've only scored one or two power play goals in the last 10 games. It's been abysmal. Beyond that, I think activating the defense a little more to get them involved in rushes would help. But as long as they're keeping the defensive game up, the goals should come. It's just they need to manage both playing well defensively and generating offense. And it seems like the Flames can't find that proper balance where they're either too offensive and giving up a whole bunch of ticky-tack type goals, or they're ultra defensive and they can't score at all because everybody's focusing on D. So it's finding that fine balance there, and I think that largely would help it be helped by acquiring some other players.
Well, and you mentioned earlier that we have pieces of good lines, but not a whole line. And when I look at the lineups right now without Frolik, on every line except for maybe the first line, I say on each one of these lines, there's dead weight. And right now, for me, it's about getting rid of that dead weight, whether that means some reassignments to the farm, whether that means bringing some new guys in. I mean, if we look at the second line, I think we could both agree that Brouwer's played better, but probably not a second-line caliber player right now.
Yeah, and he, to his credit, he has elevated his game and he's played well. And frankly, if he got slotted in on the third line for the time being with Janko and Bennett, I think that would be a positive thing. And
I think Hathaway's looking a little past his expiry date right now.
Same here. I think he had a great 8-10 games and then has disappeared into being an AHL player. Like a Freddie Hamilton type guy.
Yeah, to me right now, I'd send him back to the A and just get him some play time.
Yeah.
And on that third line, I know I got a lot of flack for being a Curtis Lazar fan, but I got to say, I don't think Lazar is the problem on that fourth line. I got to say it's been staging.
I agree.
So I think, you know, whether it's bringing a guy like Mangiapane up and putting him with Bennett or Jankowski or putting him on that fourth line, I just think it's about getting rid of some of those dead weight guys. I'd even be okay if Troy Brouwer sat down for a couple games. I'm not sure that putting him on the third line is the way to ignite those guys right now. I'd rather put a fast, younger player like Mangiapane there. But I think we need to really look at solidifying these lines and getting rid of some of that dead weight.
Yeah, and frankly, the team overall, like if they could acquire another forward, that would be helpful. Especially if it's a top six caliber forward, even a middle six guy that can shoot the puck. Like on the show last week, you mentioned a guy like Gustav Nyquist, and somebody like that would be a perfect player to stick somewhere in the lineup. So.
The other name I suggested, if we're not getting a guy like Versteeg back, who's got that veteran presence, and now losing Jágr, I bet we could get him for fairly cheap. What would you think if they were to bring Patrick Sharp in?
That'd work too. And
he's a good veteran guy. He's got a couple rings. I could see him fitting well in the second or third line.
Yeah, there's plenty of different options available. The Flames need another Versteeg, Jágr type guy just to slot in somewhere. And right. Who that is and how much you're paying, that's a question for another show. But it's obvious that the team needs another player that can contribute offensively.
I think right now with, you know, Frolik coming back, I would put Frolik back on the second line because we've seen the magic of Tkachuk back than Frolik. I think that line is better than the sum of its parts when it's all together. If it was me, I would send Garnet Hathaway down or sit him in the press box. Try Curtis Lazar on the line with Bennett and Jankowski and put Stajan, Brouwer, and I guess Lomberg together on line four.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like if the Flames do acquire some additional scorer, what I would do is actually swap the second and third lines and make like the Tkachuk line more of the defensively responsible one and the new guy with Jankowski and Bennett as the second line.
When I look at the lines, I think that it's the first and the third line that are really the scoring threats. But we saw Janko and Bennett doing well earlier in the season when Jágr was with them, and now we need to find a way to activate them again because they've just looked really flat the last couple games.
Yeah, well, teams can... If you only have one very dangerous player, you can isolate that guy. And, like, if, to use a basketball analogy, like, other teams would say that when Michael Jordan was playing, well, Jordan's going to get his points regardless. So if you defend all the other guys, then you might stand a chance to win. And it's the same thing with hockey. If you got a dangerous player on a line and nobody else to help him, well, you can limit what that one guy can do by focusing on his options and making sure that the other guys have no ability to help out. And we're seeing that with the Jankowski and Bennett line, because nobody has to pay any attention to Garnett Hathaway because he's not of a similar caliber as those two guys. So you focus your defensive efforts on those guys specifically. And
yeah,
that,
I know you're a big Hathaway fan, and I think Hathaway probably has a place here as the extra forward. I think he'll take what is now Lomberg's spot, but right now I'd send Hathaway down and let him get some play time in the A.
I agree. And he's a good energy guy, but he's not a scorer. And he's a smart player, but...
And he's being put on a scoring line.
Yeah, he's a fourth-line guy. And he'll always be a fourth-line guy. It's just the Flames needed him to be more, and for a bit he was contributing as such, but that's gone away.
Yeah, and I think, you know, maybe he's... And, you know, I know that we like him as Flames fans, but maybe this was his cup of coffee in the NHL. I think his role is easily replaced if he's not able to do it.
Oh, definitely.
You know, there's one of the guys that plays till he earns $1 million and then nobody signs him, and we find the next cheapest guy and lather, rinse, and repeat.
Yeah.
So I would agree with you about, you know, needing to be a little more offensive, activating the defenseman. Right now, the other thing I think the Flames need to do is just take some more chances. I'm seeing when I'm watching their games, they're passing one too many times. They're trying to get that sweet shot or that.
Well, that is a symptom of the team. The Flames are basically set up as a team that has a lot of Tanguay and Huzelius type players who are just cerebral thinkers and will set the play up. The Flames just don't have any Iginla types that can actually, like, once those the passer types are done doing their thing, that can actually shoot the puck into the net. And that's why a guy like Ferland is having such good success, because he's the only guy in the team that can do that. And that's part of the Flames' problem right now, is that they just don't have any shooters. And they have plenty of guys that can set the table. They just need somebody to put it in. And they just
don't
have that.
I necessarily agree with that. I think looking at the roster, you could have that. But I guess the word I would use is overcoached. Right now, everything looks like they're following a system to a T, and there's no room for guys to think on their own and say, hey, this isn't exactly how it was laid out by the coach on the blackboard before the game, but I need to think as a hockey player and react differently.
That too.
They just seem overcoached to me when I've been watching them lately. So I think they need to get back to following their instincts, doing what comes naturally, and just taking more risks. And I think that's eventually going to, you know, if you put the puck on net more, you make sure you're in the right spot. I'm still seeing them not in front of the net when they need to be, and their stick's not on the ice, and just those little things that, you know, they need to be doing, that it's going to help them. And they just need to go back to playing like they were before the break, just playing smart hockey.
Yeah, attention to details is always a good thing.
I mean, even you could argue that the Michael Ferland misconduct in the LA game was just a lack of thinking. I mean, we could debate if he should have got a penalty for that, but, you know,
Backlund?
Backlund, yeah. The Backlund 10-minute, like, that was just all. We could debate if he should have done that or not, but the rules are the rules. And, you know, to me, that was just a lack of thinking.
Yeah.
I mean, good for him for trying to give a stick to a kid. He threw the butt end over the glass, the least dangerous part, but you can't throw your stick over the glass when you're playing.
Yeah, and situational awareness as well, because Backlund's the most important defensive forward on the team, and his presence for not being there for 10 minutes hurt the team.
The other thing I'm noticing, and I noticed this especially at the LA game because I was watching for it, but when the Flames have their whole lines out, they're fine. Like when you've got Goodrow, Monahan, Ferland, or Tkachuk, Bach, and Brouwer. But those times during the changes, it's like the Flames don't know who the other guys are, or what they should do, or where they should be. And more than LA in that game, and I've watched for it since, in not just Flames games, but other games, it's like you know your two guys, but you have no idea who the other guys in the ice are. And they're squandering some chances when you don't have full lines on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little thing, but there's a few times when they were in the middle of a change, they should have got a shot off, or they should have been able to do something, and they didn't, because it's like you didn't know where you were expecting that guy to be, or you didn't trust the guy who wasn't on your line to be in the right spot. And I don't know if that makes sense,
yeah,
what I'm explaining.
Definitely.
But, you know, you've got, like, there was one time I remember seeing Goodrow, Monahan, and I think Jankowski were out there because they were doing a switch. And it's like Goodrow and Monahan didn't trust Jankowski, so they were trying to bring the puck in front of the net themselves. And Janko was open, and it's like, just pass the puck to Janko. But it's like, you know, we don't know this kid, we don't trust him, we got to do it ourselves. And so you've got to just, you know, from top to bottom, you're a team, act like it.
Mm-hmm.
But, so the question, and we talked about this a little bit, Frolik comes back tomorrow, where do you put him? Do you put him back on the second line with Backlund, Tkachuk?
Yeah.
Do you put him somewhere else?
Yeah, easy, slot him in with the 3M line and see how it goes.
If the 3M line didn't decrease their effectiveness with him away, I would have tried him on the first line. But I think that right now you need to get that 3M line clicking again. And the only way to do that right now is Michael Ferland. And, I mean, too bad for Troy Brouwer. He gets bumped off there, but he had a chance to show, you know, he could maybe stay there and didn't rise to the occasion.
Well, I think Brouwer played his best hockey of the season there, but he's not a second-line player. And
well, that's it. Yeah, he definitely played better, but he's not a second-line player for a potential playoff team.
Yeah, and he's... That's why I think having him on the third line would... Like, he should be off the fourth line based on his play. And, like, you have to reward him for not playing terribly and being a black hole on that second line. He contributed. It's just, okay, we're going to give you another shot, but with a different set of line mates, see how you do with the two kids and see if that works instead.
Yeah, I don't think you can maybe rely on that for the rest of the season.
Oh, no.
At least give him a shot there and see how he does.
Yeah, and you never know. They might find chemistry, or they might not, in which case you just go back to the way things were. But it never hurts to try it. That way you can see and know what is what.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Frolik coming back, because I think if we can get that second line running, the 3M line, that could really get this whole team going again. So, Matt, the big news of the week is Jaromir Jagr has finally said goodbye to the Calgary Flames. He was officially waived on Sunday. No team took him. I had a slight suspicion that Pittsburgh might have taken him so he could retire there, but nobody took him, and the Flames today loaned him to HC Kladno, the team that he owns in the Czech Republic. They're in the second-tier Czech league right now. We don't have all the details, but it's assumed that the Flames will continue to pay him even while he's over there. I wouldn't be surprised if they worked out a deal, but as of right now, it looks like the Flames will continue paying him. So I guess the big question is, what went wrong here? I mean, we were all excited. You especially, really excited. Jagr was coming in. We number 68 jerseys were the hottest thing in Alberta for Christmas. And all of a sudden, he's gone. And I am hearing a lot of people blaming the team for this, but I think we have to remember, he's 45 years old. That's old for a hockey player. And you've got to expect, when you're 45, you're not going to be playing a lot of games. You're going to be hurt. You're, you know, like, these guys break down, that's when most guys retire at 35. So I think it was one of these things that we knew when we were bringing him in, we might not get a full season out of him. And to me, you know, we kind of got what we paid for. I mean, we only paid him $1 million. So I don't think there's anything wrong with the way the run went with Yager. What are your thoughts?
Well, I don't necessarily think that his time with the Flames is over. I think because we can recall him. It's not like he's gone for good. The Flames still hold his rights and all that. It's just, we'll see. And if he has a good couple months in Kladno, I think that he'll be back towards the end of the season. If he continues having injury troubles, then he won't. And we'll see. But
the only way I could see him coming back is if the Flames go deep in the playoffs and bringing him in, even if he doesn't play, bringing him in just to be the a veteran mentor.
Yeah, well, the thing is that if he can go like 2 months of playing without getting hurt, then I think that he'll be fine to moving forward. It's just that, prior to his first injury this season, Yager was playing as good as he was when he was with the Florida Panthers. And it's just that he got hurt, and then it seemed like he'd just keep re-aggravating the injury, and then more injuries would pile up, and more injuries, and
right
more
now
injuries.
Right said that he has a groin and a knee injury.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, that's what happened with an older guy. I think there was a little bit of blame there, I guess if you want to call it blame, but maybe a little bit of a regret from the Flames side that we brought him in so late. If they would have decided to bring him in July or even late August, he would have had a full training camp where he might have been in better shape. And I think part of the injuries might be that he was trying to get in shape so quickly that maybe he wasn't doing it the way they should have been doing it, because it's just, oh, they signed me. I mean, remember, it took, what, like 2 weeks before I even got into a game? So I think that there's, I don't want to say fault, but maybe on both sides things could have been done a little bit differently. But do I think it was worth doing? Yeah, I think it was a great experiment. It was fun to have him around. It was good to see him here. I personally think we've seen the last of him. I don't think they'll recall him from Kladno. I think once he's over there, he's going to want to stay over there. But, you know, I think it was fun to do, and I think it just also highlights how desperate the Flames were to bring in a veteran right winger. You know, I don't think this deal would have been made if we had a first-line right winger cemented. What do you think?
No, and that's been a problem with the organization for a number of years now, is ever since Ginlan left, is that we just don't have any right-shooting right wingers of any talent. And credit to Ferland, he's stepped into a role on the first line and run with it, but
that bubble's gonna burst soon.
Not necessarily. Ferland, he is getting more rounded in his game and is getting more creative in his play. So
by
he
soon
might,
I don't mean this year, but you're not going to win a cup with Ferland as your top right winger.
Well, you could. It just would. You would need a legitimate first-ish line caliber right winger for the second line, though.
See, it's sort of like how you had who gets to a first-ish caliber, you swap them.
Well, that's the thing. Like, if you look at like teams like Chicago and Pittsburgh, like they had guys like Marian Hossa on the second line, or putting Taze on the second line and Hossa on the first to spread the wealth a bit. And I think that if Ferland can continue to do the job, then if you bring in that first line-ish right winger, you could have Tkachuk with that guy on the second line and make two good scoring lines instead of just one.
Yeah, I know where you're coming from. I also think that there's something to be said for having one really dynamite line with a couple of others. I still think that Ferland is going to be traded out of here next season. I think he's going to get more expensive than he might be worth, and he might be an asset that's movable.
I agree with you. It's just, we'll see. And, you know,
we all like him as Flames fans, but if you look at Michael Ferland, he's on the highest part of his career, and it's the Flames have a tendency not to sell high, And as much as I like Ferland, I'd say, you know, sell him while he's high. Get more assets for him. Don't do the Iginla or the Brower, or sorry, not Brower, Boma, and, you know, try to pawn a guy off when nobody wants him.
And we'll see. We still have half a year left on this year and all of next season before Ferland's... You know, that's a lot of hockey to play in order to try and figure out what Ferland is long term. Is he just a good partner to ride on that first line, or is he a legitimate player? And we still don't know, because Ferland is a bit of an enigma still. So we'll see.
Yeah, and I mean, his contract's over into next year. I don't see him getting moved this year because he is doing well on that first line, but I think next year it'll be interesting. He'll be, I think, a big storyline of next season to figure out what happens with Michael Ferland.
Mm-hmm.
So with the Jager thing, I mean, Matt, if you look back at it in the summer, knowing what you know now, if you had that crystal ball, would you have still done it if you were Flames management? Would you have undergone the Jager experiment?
Oh, definitely. You do that 100 times out of 100. He helped the other players on the team while he was here. Even just as a part-time player, part-time coach that he kind of was while he was here, that's worth the money that he was paid. And I would have signed him earlier, so that way he could have got a full training camp in and probably would have been fine all year. But it is what it is, and that's what happens.
And, I mean, if we look at him as a third-line center, I think it's fair to say he was a... Or a third-line player. I think it's fair to say he was a third-line player for the Flames. What about you?
Oh, yeah, I agree.
If you look at those third-line veteran depth guys, I mean, we paid $1 million. $1 million to you and I is a lot of money. But $1 million in an NHL contract is not that much money. And even if you look at the Flames roster, I mean, that's about what a guy like Patrick Sharp or Christopher Stieg or those kind of depth veteran guys are making. So for $1 million, I got no complaints. If this was a $5 million or $3 million or $4 million contract, I'd probably have more complaints that, you know, we're paying you this much, you owe us some hockey. But at $1 million, it was a risk worth taking any year.
Yeah, and it's also a thing, like, I think that if it was a higher dollar contract, I think that the Flames would have terminated the contract instead of loaning him out. But we'll see. I'm not 100% sold on the fact that he's done as a Flame, but we'll see. And
I don't know, the
press
release they put out seemed pretty final.
Yeah, and we'll see. If Jager has a good second half of the season, I think he'll be back. If not, hey, it was great having you here.
So you're looking at it more as a European conditioning stint.
Yeah, exactly. And if he's in game shape and works out his kinks and everything's fine, then I have no problem bringing him back. It's just, if he's good to go, there's no harm in it.
So two questions for you. Do you see Jaromír Jágr playing in the National Hockey League next season?
Possibly. I think that if he get... I think that his agent will say, sign me before training camp, because that's why this season went off the rails. I could see a team definitely bring him in. And I don't think that we've seen the end of Jaromír Jágr.
In North America, or
yeah,
necessarily in the Flames,
yeah,
organization?
In North America.
Do you think that if he doesn't play next year, let's say the injuries are too much, do you think that he comes back to North America for the Flames or somebody else in an off-ice role?
No.
Or do you think he stays in Europe?
He's not, never going to come back. He's a European at heart, and yeah, I don't blame him. That's home.
He owns the Kladno team where he's playing now. I wouldn't be surprised if we were to see him become the coach or the manager there, or, you know, play out hockey there. I don't know what the compete level's like in the Czech second league. I can't imagine it's very high. Play there till he's 50 and just can't do it anymore.
Yep.
He's probably still an attraction over there.
Yeah, definitely.
So at least, you know, at least the traveling Jágrs didn't have to travel far to see him this year.
True. And we actually got to see him in Calgary, so wearing a Flames jersey. So that was just an experience that made the $1 million worth it for all the Flames fans out there.
And for bragging rights, I mean, he said he'd never played for a Canadian team, and he really wanted to come do that. And I guess it's cool that that was with Calgary. Usually when you hear somebody say, oh, I want to play in Canada, they end up in Toronto or Montreal. And so I guess it was cool that my one Canadian team was Calgary.
Yeah. And, ever since I was a kid, I've always liked Jaromir Jagr. Like, back when he and Lemieux were with the Penguins in the early 90s, the Penguins were my second favorite team because I liked the pair of them. And, so seeing, one of the first players that I admired in the NHL growing up playing for my team, that's going to be cool no matter how long or how good he does. So... it was just cool to see, and just want to wish him all the best, whether he comes back or not. It was good that he was here.
Yeah, it was fun, for sure. It was nice to see him. It was good to see, a real pro here. I think it really helped, like you were mentioning earlier, some of the young kids like Jankowski and Bennett, I think it gave them some... almost some extra pep in their step. I know I sound like an old man when I say that, but, it gave them something extra to sort of play for, oh, wow, we're playing with this legend. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's some dressing room razzing of, guys, the old guy's got, better tempo than you. Pick it up. Let's go.
Oh, yeah.
So, and every time I saw him, I mean, you can tell he's not the most well-spoken guy. He doesn't like the media much, but he knows his role as a professional, and he had all the time in the world to answer questions and, talk to the media, and he was a really good professional this year, which is what you expect from a veteran like that. So I think it was worth doing for sure. Two more little kind of MISC Flames notes for the week. Tyler Parsons has been reassigned. He's no longer with Stockton. He'd come up for a little bit to play with the Heat. They sent him back down to Kansas, and Mason McDonald has been brought up to Stockton instead. My guess is this is purely just about minutes. If Parsons is the starter in Stockton with some unknown backup behind him, he's going to play a lot more minutes than he is going to be trying to split that net with Gillies.
Yep. And it was good that he got to see what the AHL is all about, so that way he has a better frame of reference, and we'll see how he does in Kansas City, and hopefully hopefully Mason McDonald can step up his game and play well at the AHL level and assert himself as the viable player, and... we'll see.
Right now, I think there's probably a lot of pressure on Mason McDonald because he's probably right now being seen as the odd man out of the Gillies Parsons pairing. So this is probably Mason's chance to prove himself and say, you know what, I can. Right now, my question with him is, can he play at the AHL level consistently? And this is his chance to show that. Yeah, I can be an AHL guy. I can take that second AHL spot next year to either Parsons and or Rittich as the starter.
Yeah, and realistically, a guy like McDonald, he's going to take until he's 25 or 26 to figure out whether he's going to be an NHL player. And that's just the nature of goaltenders. Sometimes it takes a very long time for him to figure it out. But as long as he's making forward progress towards that end goal, then... it's all good. And sometimes you have goalies that it just takes a while for them to sort everything out. And, take a guy like Devan Dubnyk, who struggled in his early part of his career because he was rushed to the NHL. And it took him a while to figure out how to play at an NHL level. And since then, he's been a top-tier goaltender. And I think McDonald...
well, even Derek Rittich is 25.
Yeah, and I think that McDonald is a goaltender. It's one of those weird things where all of the components of his game, he should be better right now than he is. And if he can figure out how to get all the parts to work properly together, he could be a good goaltender. It's... the whole if he will figure that out, that is the question that will be remaining for a while. until he does, or he doesn't.
Well, the other thing that I think will be interesting next year is the other Flames goaltending prospect, really the only other guy in the pipeline right now, Nick Schneider, is likely to turn pro. He's 20 right now. So where does that put Schneider in the whole thing? I can't see Schneider being more than an ECHL goaltender next year.
No, I think he'll be the ECHL backup basically until some people move out of the organization.
And, you know, I don't know how much value is there, but that's another piece I could see being thrown into a deal at a deadline or a draft day deal just to – I don't think there's – I mean, let's be honest. With McDonald, Rittich, Gillies, I don't think Schneider's got a hope in heck of cracking a, you know, a top spot for the Flames.
Again, you never know.
But you can't stockpile 100 goalies hoping one of them is going to make it. I mean, at some point, if you're going to cut bait – you probably say that McDonald's and or Schneider are the guys to cut bait on.
All your goalies are belong to us. No.
But you know what I mean? Like, at some point, if there's an asset to be traded and you need to trade a goalie, you've got to say, which of these guys do you move? Right now, I'd say McDonald. I'd be, if the Flames move McDonald and got a decent pick or, you know, put him as part of a deal, I wouldn't lose any sleep. I wouldn't, you know, I think, okay, that was a movable asset.
Or if the Flames are in a certain type of deal for a certain type of player, even moving Gillies wouldn't be the worst thing in the world either.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll talk about this as we get closer to the trade deadline, but there's also the question right now that I've been thinking about, which is, do you move Rittich while he's hot?
And that's also a feasibility, because you have to look at, say, like a team like the Ottawa Senators. Yeah, they have Craig Anderson, but he's, I think, 36 or 37.
Just like every goalie.
Yeah, but what do they have beyond that? And it's a steaming pile of nothing. So if the Flames were to, say, make a deal with the Senators, you would have to assume that one of the goalie prospects is going their way.
Yeah, and I mean, right now, as much as we're seeing good things from you know, Rittich, I'm not convinced Rittich is hand over fist better than Gillies. So
no.
I would say if you, I think they're pretty equal, and he's just the guy who got the nod right now. So if you can move Gillies while he's, or move Rittich while he's hot to, you know, to get a good asset, then you move him and you put Gillies back in the number two spot.
Yeah, well, I think this is more of a situation where not to oversell it, but a situation like Montreal had with Price and Halak, where both were NHL caliber guys, one was just clearly better than the other.
Yeah, and Halak, I think, is an NHL quality starter. Rittich is not.
No, and I think that both Gillies and Rittich are NHL caliber goalies, potential even NHL caliber starters, but Gillies has the higher potential. So long term, I think that a team wanting an asset like a goaltending prospect would probably take Gillies, but you also have to weigh, is Parsons good enough where he then takes the mantle of the starter guy coming up, and Rittich just is the placeholder backup 1B type guy until Parsons is ready, which is viable, especially if Smith can, like, there's no reason that you couldn't, after next year, re-sign Smith to a one-year deal if Parsons isn't quite ready yet.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting Vezina quality goaltending from Smith this year, but he's also old, and I'm not convinced he's not going to go downhill a bit next year. So I think we need to have a more capable backup next year to fill in some of those gaps that we might get with Smith.
Yeah. But it's one of those things that you have to weigh, is the return you're getting better than keeping Gillies or Rittich or Parsons or whatever? It just depends. And that's part of the fun of seeing how a trade will foment and develop.
And Matt, I looked it up. I think in Ottawa they have a different pronunciation than you do. Steaming pile of nothing. It looks like they pronounce it Mike Condon.
Yeah, as I said.
It's a different pronunciation.
Yeah.
So they say it differently in the East.
Yeah, it's the French pronunciation. There you go.
Mike Condon.
Yes.
So that's who's back. I didn't even know Mike Condon was still around.
Yeah.
This is like Dave Abisher or whatever his name was. He was always around, and you're like, how's this guy still here? What's he still doing around here?
Yeah. Or Peter Budaj or Stefan Fisse or, like, you know, a whole bunch of different guys.
Or,
and it's like,
who's the goalie that keeps getting moved this year?
Antti Niemi. There you go.
Yeah, it's like, oh, Niemi's still around? Okay. And somebody claimed him? Somebody actually wants him? Wow. The last Flames thing I thought we'd talk about, there's a strong rumor right now that the Calgary Flames might be one of the teams going overseas next year to play some exhibition games. They last did this, I think it was, what, 97 or 99 when they played against Vancouver in Japan?
Yeah.
I'd have to look back at exactly what year. But the rumor is this year the Flames might play the Boston Bruins in China. And the whole thing just seems weird to me. I mean, if you're going to send somebody over there for a special game, why would you not send, like, Calgary-Vancouver or Calgary-Edmonton? Why do you send Calgary and Boston? It just seems like a very weird pairing
to
go over.
Well, like, even if you took, like, Calgary and Montreal or Calgary and Tampa, where there's some history between the two teams via the Stanley Cup Finals, like, at least there's something, but I can't remember a memorable Calgary-Boston game at any point ever, so
it just seems like they picked two random teams out of a hat and said, okay, you guys are going over there.
Yeah. Well, I think they had Ottawa and Colorado going to Sweden this year, so.
But I guess if you're trying to sell the game overseas, you want to sell, you know, a rivalry. Like, I think if you sent the Battle of Alberta over there, you could sell that rivalry to the fans over there.
Yeah. I don't know. It's
so. It seems kind of weird, and it's. I've never been a fan of these games, but I can see Sweden. I can see some of these places where they go where there's actual hockey talent. But to me, China's really weird because part of the reason the NHL said they didn't want to do the whole South Korea thing is there's no point in growing the game over there. That's why they. Big reason why they said they didn't want to send players to the Olympics. Now I'm going, well, China's no better. Like, it's an odd choice to go to China.
Well,
it just seems like a weird place for an exhibition game to me.
Well, if you're just looking at pure demographics, there's over a billion people in China. So if you can get a little bit of the market share, that's a lot of people. And that might increase your revenue. So I can understand it, but it's literally just dollars and cents. I don't think it has anything to do with, like, trying to build the game necessarily.
But, I mean, you're not going to put a billion people in an arena. Like, I wouldn't imagine you would sell any more tickets in China than you would in Russia or Sweden or, you know, some hockey, Czech Republic, some hockey market.
No, but you might get some merchandise sales or people buying, like, Game Center live but overseas, so that way they can watch whichever teams. It's possible.
Yeah, it's possible. I don't know. I mean, I'm not in the NHL's marketing department, but it just seems like an odd place to put an exhibition game.
Yeah, like, you would figure that if you're going to especially have games in China, that you would try to make it so that you had teams that had players of at least some Asian descent in...
Remember last year, what was it? Vancouver hired a goalie... Didn't they play in China some last year and they hired a goalie just for that one game?
Yeah. Like, I could see bringing maybe Spencer Fu along, but, you know, beyond that, I don't know.
Well,
just a little weird.
Yeah, and I can see... I guess I don't understand it for an exhibition game, too. Like, I think that kind of diminishes it. If you want to do these worldwide games, I think it'd be neat to have opening night of the NHL... 9 games from around the world all being played. I have 1 in Canada, 1 in the U.S., 1 in Russia, 1 in Sweden, 1 in China. And that, I think, would make for a really cool opening night.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, like, you can almost simulcast. We're here live at Hockey Night in Canada. Now we go to our correspondent in China. And, you know, I think that would be really cool. But when you say, let's go all that way for an exhibition game, it just seems like kind of a waste of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you do want to engage the Chinese market, I mean, there's a KHL team over there. Mike Keenan works for them. He's coaching there, I think. So I'd almost say if you're going to do it, you know, you should almost take on their team. Like, send an NHL team over to take on their team. And I think you're going to build more popularity doing that when you go, oh, can our team stack up to an NHL team? Let's go find out.
Yeah, well, then you know Edmonton's not going.
Well, then we can send Buffalo.
Oh, yes.
Or maybe it's, you know, like the Team North America. We send the best of under 24 players. But don't know. It seems like a long way to go just to play the Boston Bruins.
Yeah.
It's not so much the game in China that I'm confused about. It's more the matchup of Calgary-Boston to do it. Like you said, put some teams that have a history, be it Calgary-Edmonton, or if you want to feature an East-West team, do, you know, Calgary-Montreal.
Even Toronto would be some sense. You know, like, it's just like there's no real memorable anything with most of the Eastern Conference teams against Calgary, so...
I also imagine if you were to ask Chinese fans, what teams do you know in the NHL? I could see them saying the Boston Bruins, you know, probably the original six, but I doubt many of them say, oh, Calgary Flames. So it seems like you'd want to send names over there they already know.
Yeah. Unless the NHL believes that Calgary has marketable star players, which, okay.
Could be, and that's always the interesting thing, too, is when you go that far. I mean, it takes away an exhibition game, generally.
Yeah.
But you also end up sending your star players over there. They want a very star-studded lineup, so it could be interesting to almost see, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Flames did something like another game with Calgary-Boston at the same time in Calgary or Boston to make it like a split-squad game.
Mm-hmm.
I could totally see the Flames doing something like that where, okay, we're going to have a bunch of rookies here. Boston, you leave your rookies behind, and let's have the two teams play back in North America.
Yep.
But just it hasn't been fully announced yet, but a really weird scenario there. I scratched my head when I saw this news today. Well, I think, Matt, unless there's anything else you want to talk to us, that brings us to the weekly polls.
Sure.
The weekly poll, we asked a question 2 weeks ago before the Flames went in their bye week, and we asked, what do you think the bye week does for the Flames' momentum? And we got three results here. We had 33% of respondents who thought they'd be more energized and rested. The win streak would continue. 33% thought the Flames will lose their momentum and rack up a few consecutive losses, which is exactly what we've seen. And 33% of respondents said their play goes back to what we've seen for most of the season. Nobody thought that the guys would be less banged up and are going to play about 500 hockey for the rest of the month. So for those of you that thought they'd lose some momentum and rack up the losses, you were right. We have a similar question for the coming week. As always, we have a weekly question that we ask anyone who wants to answer for us. You can go on Twitter and answer it. We're at Fireside Podcast, and we always have a pin to the top of our Twitter feed. You can answer it on Facebook by going to facebook.com/firesidechat. Again, we have it pinned to the top of our page. Or on our website. It's right on the homepage at firesidechat.ca. And the question we're going to ask you guys is, as the calendar turns from January to February, how do you think the Flames are going to fare in February? Do you think they'll break even playing about 500 hockey? Do you think they'll fall into a hole and play less than 500 hockey? Do you think they'll play better than 500 hockey? Or do you think they catch fire and go on another big streak? And when I look at the schedule coming up in February, it's an interesting schedule to me. There's a lot of Eastern Conference games, but also not a lot of games that matter points-wise for the Flames. So if there's a month for the Flames to be giving up points, it's February, because March, there's a lot more games that count.
Yeah, and Calgary just needs to play consistent. At least for a little bit, and try to get their, like, all the little details going their way. Realistically, they should go on a tear based on the schedule, but they should have won several games this week, and that didn't turn out. So
the one thing I think might help is on the 6th, they start a 2-week road trip, and I think they might just need to get away from home to sort of reset some of their habits.
Yeah, and I could see that.
They had a long break. A lot of them were home with the family or went on vacation.
Oh, did you hear about the Flames and the Oilers vacationing together?
No.
Yeah, during the break, a bunch of the Flames players and the Oilers players ended up booking at the same hotel and ended up spending the break together.
Interesting.
Yes. You'd think that with all the hotels in the world that...
What hotel? Do we know, or where was this?
It was in Cabo, I think.
Okay.
They mentioned it during the Oilers broadcast. It's just small world.
So this must have been something that's well marketed to NHL players.
Yes.
Somebody knows their digital marketing. When you're on Facebook, you can do targeting. They say target any male who plays in the NHL in Alberta. Either that or they share the same travel agent. Who knows? But yeah, I mean, if we look at it, the Flames have pretty much been at home since the break. They had one trip quick trip to Edmonton. Now they're back this week. So I'm really thinking that we might see sort of a rocky week while they finish up at home. And I think this two-week road trip is really what might snap the team back into playing the way they have. But we'll talk about that when we get there. Let's talk about the week ahead first. Flames have three games until we talk to you guys next. The first one is tomorrow night on Tuesday night, the 30th, against the Vegas Golden Knights. This is the first time the Flames and the Vegas Golden Knights ever play, and the first time the Vegas Golden Knights will come to the Saddle Dome. That's a 7 p.m. start. Then on Thursday the 1st, the Calgary Flames host the Tampa Bay Lightning, who we know we did pretty well last time we played them in Tampa. And on Saturday the 3rd, the Calgary Flames play against the Chicago Blackhawks. That's an 8 p.m. start. Then they have a couple games before they go on the road to see the Blackhawks again. But those three games of the home streak, Matt, how do you think we're going to do?
Well, they need 4 points out of the three games.
So which four do they get?
I think they're going to beat Vegas, and I think they're going to beat Chicago.
You think they'll fall to Tampa this time?
Yeah. I think they're going to be pissed off after the 5-1 kicking that they got. So yeah, that'll be my picks.
Yeah, I think that there's enough. I think there's probably enough momentum right now with not winning four, and you got to win, and who better to beat than Vegas? This is the best team. I think the Flames are going to be fired up for this one, and I think if they don't lose, if they don't win, that they're going to at least have 1 point in that game. I totally agree with you. They're going to lose to Tampa, and I think they'll beat Chicago. So I'm going to go. I'm going to say that they get 1 point. They lose either overtime or shootout to Vegas. I think they lose to Tampa, and they'll win in Chicago, or against Chicago. And then it's pretty much an Eastern swing for the next little bit after that.
Yeah. Well, realistically, the Flames just need to keep it up and play well. And as long as they're getting points, because realistically, the Flames only need to care about the teams in our own division. And
I mean, we as fans want to see wins, but as long as they're not getting 0 points, they're doing well. As much as we don't want to see losses in overtime or shootout, I'd rather those, because at least we're walking away with a point.
Yeah, because like if we walked in during this show and we lost to Winnipeg and LA and we beat Buffalo and Edmonton, we'd be like, yeah, well, we could have done better against those two teams, but hey, we got 4 points. It's all right. Yeah, it sucks that we lost all four in a row, but at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. We got 4 points. So as long as the Flames can continue doing well and pushing upward in the standings, then that will be good. And try to create some separation between themselves, San Jose, LA, and Anaheim. That's the important thing.
Right now, looking at sort of what I'm seeing from the Flames, I think you could probably make the argument that if nothing else, right now they really just have to be winning divisional games and getting at least a point against Western Conference competitors.
Yeah, because realistically, like everybody, Chicago, Edmonton, Vancouver, and Arizona are pretty much out of it. Like, Chicago could bounce back, everybody else is gone. So for the non-playoff teams, that leaves you with LA, Minnesota, and Anaheim. Like, as long as we can, like, outpace those guys, we're good. It's just making sure that they continue to outpace those guys. And you also have to look at the fact that the Flames haven't played their best hockey all year yet. And
well,
if they ever
have they? I mean, well, that's the scary part.
Well, yeah. Well, if that is it, like, then they have more problems than.
I also think that looking, I mean, we played 49 games. I think looking at the teams below us, Colorado is going to fizzle. I don't think Anaheim lost the pace. I think really Minnesota and LA are the two teams that are going to be struggling to get a wild card spot. And I think LA, I don't know, they've had some disappointing ends. I think that LA ends up fizzling at the end. So as long as Calgary can at least last the pace, I think they're okay.
Yeah. Like, if I had to pick based on the styles of the teams, I think that Anaheim makes it, and I think that Minnesota makes it. I think Dallas and Colorado fade. So
We'll see. I just right now I'm not even too worried about, you know, who we might play in the playoffs. I'm just worried about us getting to the playoffs at this point.
Yeah. As long as we've got next by our name, yay. So that way we're not in lotto pick land. Because, like, exactly. I'm not really, like, as long as we're in one of the top three spots, I'm not really too scared by any of the teams in our division. Like, there's no big bad wolf. Like, even Vegas is kind of overblown. So
I think Vegas, I still think as soon as they get to the playoffs, their balloon just, you know, pops.
Yeah. Like, realistically, the only teams in the West that I think have staying power, the Central Division teams that are in 1 through 3, Winnipeg, Nashville, and St. Louis, everybody else is kind of varying degrees of meh. So as long as the Flames can hold on through all of that, then they stand a good chance. It's just, yeah, we'll see.
Well, let's see how they do in these three games that end off their home run, their home streak here, and we will talk to you next week before the Flames go on the road.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a good week, and go Flames, go.
Fireside Chat is hosted by Dan Stevenson, co-hosted by Matt DeBorg. This episode produced and edited by Peter Marino. Fireside Chat is licensed under Creative Commons license. For full license details, visit firesidechat.ca.